Real sports guys, does get real. When real guys talk real sports, we will. Ray, Marcus, game changer, does get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Certain guys, you just gotta recognize, I gotta pay the money, I gotta see. Everybody has an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We're not gonna make it. Sometimes you gotta create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron's kids.
I do have a good problem with execution. Right?
He burned it. A lot of bridges. He's gonna be hated in Chicago. He's gonna be hated in Cleveland. He's gonna be hated in New York, and that's what I'm excited to see.
Now I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's gonna be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play them.
Man, oh man, that's a beautiful sound. Welcome to the Real Sports Guy, where real guys talk real sports. It's your man Marcus, the game changer, holding it down with my man D. Wills. We're going to keep it hopping. Tourney week, what I like to call basketball Christmas. A lot going on. We're going to walk you through it all over the next 2 hours. You know, we got you holding it down with you from 10 to midnight Central Time. And we're going to get it going. I got my man D. Wills out there. Holler at the people.
Working on these brackets, so if y'all coming in on the Real Sports Guys Tourney Challenge, get prepared to get beat down. That's what we do. If you know your game, come to the challenge. Hit us on Facebook. I'm getting ready. This is my season. This is where I beat all challengers.
So yeah, you know, we got this going down. We got the bracket challenge, the challenge. All right, D. Wills has got some hot prizes for the top three spots. But the key to the challenge is that you have to knock the real sports guys out. Because we plan on taking down those top three spots. We plan on holding down one of those top spots. So if you want a shot at the top spots, you got to knock us out.
That's it. And it can't happen. I don't think it can happen. I don't think there's folks out there that's going to knock all three of us out.
Nah.
Now, Ray, you know, Ray's been on sabbatical. You might get Ray because he don't have his glasses, but we gonna get.
See, Ray been studying with the monks.
Like
Ray's on a spiritual journey right now. His powers may be at an all time level. We don't know.
Oh no, this is our time. Well, I'm ready to shine right now.
Oh, yeah. This is what we do, man. This is what we do. So it's a beautiful time of the year. You know, Thursday, it really kicks off. We got a couple playing games tonight. I really can't even find them on my TV right now. You know, I got to figure out what's up with this True TV.
I think it's on the Oxygen channel, man. I think they put it on the Oxygen channel.
They put it on Oxygen? Or
yeah,
is it on Bravo?
On Bravo. I think it is on.
I think that's going to wind up being a problem for the NCAA, man. The game is going to be all over the place. Like, if they had to cap it on TNT, TBS, and CBS, I could work with that because I know what those channels are. I actually watch those channels on occasion. I don't mess with no True TV. I don't even know what they show on True TV. I mean, what is True TV? Is it like, what is it? What is it, a reality network or something?
I don't know. You know, I've been trying to watch the basketball live, so I don't know.
Hey, did you see the Basketball Wives reunion, man? I watched the Basketball Wives reunion with my wife. I will admit, it's an interesting cross section, man. Because like, I know the players. She don't know the players, you know. But she's interested in the women and their life and just, you know, the groupie aspect of the whole sports scene. So I know the players. And you know, I'm connecting the dots for her. You know, we're watching Basketball Wives, and I'm like, oh, that's Kenny Anderson baby mama, and this Antoine Walker's ex girlfriend, and oh, Eric Williams, that's Eric Williams' wife. I'm like, they was all on the Celtics at the same time in Brown 99-2000, so that's probably where they all met. You know, so I'm trying to put, I'm helping her put the pieces together. Like, so it's not just random. It's not just random. These are all connected people, you know. So I help her put the pieces together from the sports standpoint.
They're all connected. If my daughter kills me because she comes out here like that, I can't believe you watch it. But I'm glued to it. It's like a
trailer. It is. It
is. I never knew Eric Williams. Eric Williams was good, but you watch Basketball Wise, you think he was like perennial all-pro. I was like, damn, Eric. Now, Eric was good, but.
Yeah, you know, he hung in the league for a while.
For the Celtics.
Yeah.
He had a nice little game. You know, he fit into the pieces, but when you watch the game, you think, damn, Eric was like Parrish.
right.
He wouldn't bring it like that. So yeah, that is the show. But that's about it. So I don't know what True TV is. I'm about to do my search.
Yeah, we're gonna have to figure that out.
Probably we're gonna find like Charles, because they're gonna have to tuck Charles away. Charles is a pro game. Charles might stumble a little bit on the basketball game. They're gonna tuck him away on True TV.
Well, see, I want to see Charles. I want to listen to Charles do a college game because I think he's gonna bring a refreshing perspective to college basketball, man. Because I get tired of listening to Dick Vitale and Jay Billis and some of these other cats just ride the jocks and some of these young cats, man, and just ride the college game. I think he's gonna give a perspective where it's like, yo, this actually isn't good basketball right now. I don't know what the hell y'all talking about. You know what I mean? And Charles may keep it real. Like, the other announcers, they got an investment in the game itself and the success of the game. Charles is just calling the game. You know, he's just going to call it like you see it. If it's a bad game or if it's a kid that, you know, like, I'm interested to hear Charles' perspective on Jimmer Fredette. Because Jimmer Fredette is, to me, he's soaking wet with the Adam Morrison effect. You know,
you can't put him on anybody. He can't at the next level. Who he gonna guard?
Right, he's too short to guard too.
Yeah,
and he ain't quick enough to hold a Derrick Rose or Rondo or Westbrook or John Wall. I can go down a list of point guards. Right now, it's not the time to be a slow white point guard. Sorry, this is not the era for that.
He might fit into a nice triangle system where he could space the floor, and he better have a big man protect the rim.
It's only two teams that play the triangle. It's only two teams that play the triangle right now, and that's the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Los Angeles Lakers. If he go to the Timberwolves, good for him. He could play. He could pick up some minutes on the Timberwolves. If he go to the Lakers, he can't guard. He can't play because he can't guard. The Lakers put a premium on defense, and he can't guard.
But
he wouldn't be able to play in that system. There's not a lot of places he's going to be able to go. Maybe he can go to a place like Phoenix where they don't demand a whole lot of defense, or he could fit in with the Knicks where they don't demand a whole lot of defense right now. But he can't guard nobody. He's going to die in the league because he can't guard nobody. And, I mean, he doesn't even have half the tools that J.J. Redick had as far as athletic ability.
So what you saying?
Because J.J. Redick just squirrels everything he can out of his body.
So what you saying, Tel Aviv is in his future?
Oh, absolutely.
Tel Aviv
absolutely.
Is in his future.
Absolutely. Jimmer Fredette is going to be a bust.
He's going to be a bust.
He's going to be a bust.
You heard it here.
Yeah, he's a high-volume shooter.
He got the ultimate green light, so you're going to miss a few. You're going to make a few. He is not going to get his stuff together out there. But for the tournament, when it's one game, you don't have a chance to really size up somebody like that. If you don't see him all the time, you know, he could put together a little run in the tournament.
I don't think so. But I think they're going to get ousted. I don't think they get past the first weekend.
When we get in the brackets, I got to figure out where I put them. But I don't want to give anybody any clues until they –
I'm going to give you a clue. I ain't got BYU going nowhere. I had a clue. I will tell you. I ain't got BYU going nowhere. I don't trust them boys.
See,
anytime you're kicking somebody off the team for getting some, you got a problem with me.
And that's the thing, but that's where I have to bring in the rate factor. We got to think about where they play. I never forget when Wisconsin was playing out in Utah, and we were picking, and Ray said, and I was picking it, and Ray was just a subtle thing. He said, "Now you got to think about where they playing." And they were playing somebody like, you know, somebody that was from a city, you know, maybe like Georgetown or somebody. Somebody out, you know, out in, and you know, they said, "Now you're gonna be out in Salt Lake City. The Wisconsin boys gonna be okay out there in Salt Lake. They're gonna be okay. They come from Madison to Salt Lake. They can do that. These cats coming from New York City, Salt Lake, that's not gonna be a good. They're gonna be looking to get out of there that weekend. So you got to add in where they playing. What's going to happen with that? But I don't have BYU going too far. So when we get in, we're going to dissect it. I'm going to get into it. I got some stuff behind it. I don't want to give away too many clues because I'm not trying to give away one of the first three spots. But we definitely going to get deep on that.
All right. We will absolutely do that. What I do want to jump into real quick before we get too deep into talking about this year's tournament is that was a nice piece over the weekend on the Fab Five. Now, I didn't get a chance to catch it, but D caught it. Now, D, for those of you out there, you know, you're on with the Real Sports Guys. D's repping A Squares, he called it, Ann Arbor. You know, right. I rep for Madison, for Wisconsin. You know, it's hard times up here right now, but I still rep. So he lived the Fab Five era in Michigan. So he's gonna break it down for us really in depth and give us some real in depth look into the documentary and some of the behind the scenes knowledge that he has of what went down during the 5-5 era.
I mean, what I loved about it is it started out with the finish of the 89 tournament. And the 89 team is a team that I'm very familiar with. I knew guys on that squad. The thing about it, when people talk about the Fab Five, I still think the best Michigan team was that 89 team because of the components that it had. And, you know, people who know Michigan, we can argue back and forth. Some folks would go all the way back into the 70s about Michigan teams, but that 89 team was a special team. It was constructed in a different way. It often doesn't get reflected on in the same way. So I like the fact that it kind of started there because I remember meeting Coach Fisher earlier in the season when I was out visiting one of my guys who played at Illinois, and that was before he became the head coach. It was good that, and the reason why I say this is that when I met him, it was interesting. Frieder was kicking us out of the gym because we were in there kind of watching the game, and he came over and said we had to leave, and he saw the shirt I was wearing from Boyd College, and he said, do you know Coach Napton? And obviously Coach Napton was a coach at Boyd College. Napton knew everybody. And he spent some time talking to him, and just the way he engaged. So I liked him just from that experience. And then when he took over coach and had that run, you know, I always had a good feeling about who he was as a person. And so this 5-5 story, to me, one of the tragedies is the way that he got positioned and had to leave the university in this story. And also what I liked about it is as they moved from 89 into the Fab Five, you also had to look at the era of the time. So, you know, most of y'all know Marcus and I talk hip-hop. It was the hip-hop explosion at the same time to me. I liked the way in which that was woven into who these young men were.
Mm-hmm.
And then how that was also juxtaposed against Duke and the type of players that Duke recruited. And if you remember that time, that was a really difficult time because, you know, you also had Cosby Show. So the whole idea of black identity, all that stuff, you know, when you start to unpack it, to me, was powerful. And to understand how this team was constructed, but also understand what they endured. I mean, I didn't really kind of really think about what they had to endure as players. It really didn't hit me as much until I watched this film when it was all put together. And to see how much these young people who are only 18, 19 years old endured, thinking about the mail that they received from alums who called them all kinds of names, you know, who didn't like the fact that there were five black players playing for Michigan. what they represented in terms of hip-hop and what they represented in terms of pop culture. I really admire, I've always been a fan of Jalen. And watching the documentary and watching the way that they reflected on it and who they were tells you a lot about who they were even at that time. And Jalen was always seemed to be that cat that was steady and fierce and fought. And so just, I mean, all those elements of race, sports, and culture, you know, that, you know, the Real Sports Guys, we get into this stuff. To me, this was all about what we talk about as a show. It was all about the NCAA and it's the continuing struggle it has to balance between what it means to be amateur and what it means to be big business and sports. I mean, I think it all was culminated in this show. So for me, that you know, and on top of it, at home was probably one. This was the thing that I sat and watched. I've taped it. I'm gonna watch it again. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it because. Now freshmen play and leave all the time. Back then, that wasn't the way it was done. If you stayed until you were a junior, senior year, I mean, that's what people did. But to have five freshmen walk on the floor and what they had to endure and all the other things around them, incredible. So that's just kind of my opening remarks. But, you know, I think that, you know, if you have any comments on it, if you had a chance to look, please post on our Facebook, you know, call into the show. Marcus, I don't know if you gave a line.
No, I haven't given a line yet. Yeah, if you want to call in, it's 1-347-989-0844. Call in and give us your opinion on the Fab Five documentary. We want to hear it, so feel free to get on with the Real Sports Guys. We'll be here till midnight, so feel free to call in.
Yeah, Marcus, I was here. My brother called me. We talked about this. I was on the way to work today. I got an hour to commute, and my brother talked about because he knows Jimmy King.
Uh-huh.
And he said, Devon, you know, he was laughing because he said. He said, Jimmy was on with your boy Skip Bayless, is it? You doing
yeah,
this?
Yeah.
And, cause Skip, because, you know, because they talked about, they talked about Duke players as Uncle Toms. And so he said, what do you mean about Uncle Toms? And so he said that Jimmy kind of, it seemed like he kind of backpedaled a little bit, but he said, you know, and he gave his own definition of Uncle Tom. And so then Skip said, well, they recruited Chris Webber. And then Jimmy said, but Chris went to Country Day. That's not in Detroit. And
yeah.
Just the whole element of, and then, so what I told my brothers, I said, but it's interesting who Beeline's recruiting now. In some
mm-hmm.
ways, those players right now are more like Duke players. Tim Hardaway's son, Horford, you know, kids who are coming from more, and some of the kids who traditionally would have gone to Michigan, basketball players, are now going to Michigan State. But
right.
The whole idea of how players like Grant Hill were framed because, you know, both parents were well-to-do. He had both. And Jalen was very honest about, personally, about why he didn't like Grant Hill at that time. And then
uh-huh.
talked about his own situation and not having a relationship with his father, who was a player. So just those kinds of things, to me, were very powerful. I mean, anybody who likes sports and history and race, you couldn't walk away from this film and not feel that.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so powerful about the story is that, you know, culture and sports through these guys were so directly on display, and the intersection was right there, you know. Like, without the Fab Five, we don't get an Allen Iverson, you know, and guys of that era of the NBA who came out and had that unabashed, this is who I am, I'm hip-hop, you know, Rasheed. Those kind of guys came after the Fab Five, but I think the Fab Five had a tremendous influence on guys like that who came after them, who really bucked the system and was like, I'm going to be myself, I'm going to be who I am. They had that bit of, they had that Muhammad Ali-type swagger without the substance. You know, they had that Ali stance where it's like,
that's right,
I'm going to be me, I'm going to do me, but they didn't have the substance behind why they were doing what they were doing that Ali had, you know. But nowadays, I think, everybody's emulating MJ swagger, you know, and everybody, you know, MJ wasn't never about a whole lot but selling shoes. You know, he did what he could do, but Mike was all about competing and winning. And Mike wanted to be the best ball player and the best mogul and all those things. He wasn't really necessarily supremely socially conscious. He wasn't nearly as socially conscious as he maybe could have been. So I think a lot of athletes are taking those cues now. So you have a different you have a different mindset of today's athlete in comparison to those guys who came after the Fab Five. And people sleep on the Running Rebels of that time, of that era, too, because the Running Rebels were, you know, I think that's where the Fab Five took their cues from.
That's right.
You know, I think what made the Fab Five special was that they were five freshmen, and they were young and brash, and they were bringing it. But Tark had them boys in Vegas, you know, doing that thing, too.
Moses Scurry. I mean, yeah, you had that. I like the way you brought that back, because I think people sleep on the impact UNLV had, because to me, UNLV was my team. They represented, like, NWA, what I thought.
Yeah.
And what they brought to the table. And my guy Anderson, he's from Detroit. And so they had those elements that I really respected, that I love, like Public Enemy. And I mean, they brought that theme as well, UNLV, that anti whatever. So you're right. I like the way you brought, because I think people miss that boat all the time.
Yeah, and I think I think UNLV because the Fab Five had made history, you know, but that UNLV team went undefeated, you know. A UNLV team got through the regular season undefeated, and that was a hell of a team. I mean, Larry Johnson was a monster. You know, I was talking with a coworker of mine about, we were talking about the NCAA tournament, and you know, guys who had great runs in the tournament, and you know, we got talking about the old Duke teams with Hurley and Leitner and Hill, and you know, the UNLV teams and the old Georgetown teams and some of those St. John's teams. And as we were talking, we started to transition into talking about, you know, how did those guys do in the pros. And, you know, two guys who could have had Hall of Fame careers, and for one of them, it may still be a Hall of Fame career, but Grant Hill and Larry Johnson. Larry Johnson was a monster his first couple of years in the league. I mean, and I was thinking about this, and I was like, you know who Larry Johnson reminded me of? Blake Griffin. He played with that reckless abandon to the rim that Blake Griffin has. And that's, you know, Blake, a lot of people talk about Blake Griffin being more Sean Kemp-like. I would go far to say his explosiveness reminds me of LJ when he was healthy. You know, that's who he reminds me of, is Larry Johnson. Larry Johnson was about 6'7", about 250. I mean, he was built like LeBron.
Yeah.
But he was powerful as hell.
Yeah.
You know, he was built like LeBron, but he was powerful as hell. And, I mean, he was a 6'7", 250-pound power forward. And LJ was just a beast down low. He was a beast going to the basket. You know, if you wanted to say LeBron was a combination of two guys, you would look at LeBron as a combination of Magic and LJ's body. You know, Magic's skill set and LJ's body. You know, and I think Blake Griffin has a lot of that explosiveness that LJ had. So, you know, we got to talking, and, you know, I made those connections between two of the best players in the league now with Blake Griffin and LeBron, and how you could see a lot of that LJ DNA in them.
A lot of it, and, you know, you know, it almost makes you think, because everybody talks about it, and I know we'll get to the NBA at some point, but, you know, and people worry about Blake wearing down, almost like a great running back. Because you have to come with so much energy and power to go over people and play at the height he's playing at in the league. You know he's in that 6'10" range or whatever. But it feels like he has to, you know, until he develops his game a little bit. And I think that's what LJ is, that LJ had to every night go through people, go over him, and to not, you don't get easy baskets when you bang in like that.
Right.
And it takes a toll on your body. It shortens your career, almost like, you know, running backs now. You know, at some point you just can't keep running like Larry Johnson ran and not wear it out. You just gonna hit the wall and come down. And guys like that play that way as well. I mean, as you were laying this out, man, you think about the connection, and this is something that would be an interesting story to do, is the kind of moments in which there were counterculture. So you take, like, Georgetown, UNLV, Fab Five.
Right.
Like, they all had the, you know, everybody wore the Georgetown hat.
Yep.
He would kill yep. because it was just so anti everything else. Everybody yep. was wearing the Georgetown gear. Same thing with LV and then that Fab Five. Fab Five just exploded it in a whole nother level, you know. But you just, like, as we kind of make those connections, you know, Georgetown kind of opened the door a little bit, LV opened it, and then the Fab Five just kicked it straight open.
It's kind of like UNLV was the Rakim, you know, if you wanted to compare the teams to a rapper, UNLV would be like Rakim.
Yep.
Georgetown was kind of more militant, a little bit more KRS.
Yeah.
And then the Fab Five came along and they were Biggie, and they went mainstream. They went mainstream and just blew it all up.
That's it.
And I think that's what you're looking at right there.
That's right.
That's what you're looking at right there. Is that like you had you know UNLV is Rakim. They just had that straight raw swagger. You know they could beat you in 100 different ways. They could slice you up in 100 different ways, and they were just ill.
That's right.
And then you had Georgetown. You know, you had John Thompson. They had a philosophy. They had an image, but that image was we're gonna have an all black squad. We're gonna do it our way. We're gonna play hard. We're gonna beat you up, but we're gonna do it and we're gonna respect you at the same time. We're gonna kill you. You know, and that's
right.
KRS.
That's
You know, that's the teacher.
That's right. You know? Teacher. I think very deeply.
Right. And then you had the Fab Five come through, you know, and that's where like was like, you know, you had kids in the suburbs trying to, you know, sag their shorts, wear black socks after the Fab Five came on the scene, and that's the Biggie. That's the Biggie factor. That's the Biggie effect. Where it just went global at that point. It went beyond just the black thing and became like a culture thing, and everybody had their eyes on it from that point on. You know.
See, this is the kind of analysis you're gonna get on Real Sports Guys. You're not gonna get it anywhere else. You can look across your dial. You're not gonna get these kind of connections between stuff. Y'all got to make sure y'all call in, check us out on Facebook. And then hit us up with that number, Marcus.
That's 1-347-989-0844. Come hop on with the Renegades. Got that Renegade Radio going right now. Y'all missing it. Get on, get in the conversation. We love to see your take on what we're talking about. We're going to continue to talk about the college basketball season. We're going to transition from talking about the Fab Five, even though we could talk about the Fab Five all night, man. We really
I do want to come back to it because the part I do.
Well,
want to
let's keep going. Let's keep going with the Fab Five conversation.
Point,
we got all day. It's our show.
And it was interesting to hear. Ed Martin, who's the booster who, provided the resource and the money. It was interesting to hear Jalen talk about him, and talk about his disappointment and how Chris. Positioned him or framed him and his family, and how that became a little stress between the two of them. But the idea that they did this movie and Chris wasn't able to even be a part of it, it says a lot about, you know, when I looked at, you know, what I always realized about the various players, that Chris always struggled with the idea, even though he grew up, you know, somewhat he grew up in the Easter area, but then going out there and going to Country Day, and as Eminem said, 8 Mile, you got two good parents. You know, when he's talking about your boy on the when they went at each other, you know,
yeah.
Different kind of thing. And then Jalen being at Detroit Southwestern, you just think about who they are. But then you think about how they handled adversity. You know, Jalen
uh-huh.
goes into the grand jury and is basically, yeah, you know, I left pocket change or whatever, and Chris had to rebrand or re whatever he had to do and push it and position him, and just kind of talking about that and how that is that all those other players are re-engaged in the program for the most part, I think. And Chris is still not reconnected. And I know with the ruling, he can't really reengage until 2013 or something like that. But that part of it, you know, kind of the closing, and you can tell that folks want to receive them back, and want to receive him back. Jalen's already been engaged, doing the scholarships and running the foundation and doing a lot of stuff. Jimmy King is doing play-by-play and involved. And so folks have already, but that piece, that closure, that it appears that something's happened with Chris not being able to re-engage or even be a part of this as a step towards closure was, was something that was, for me, disappointing. Because I think I like the fact that I think this is a guy that has a lot to say, but I think there are times when he shies away from that responsibility, whether it was on the court at Sacramento when it was time for the moment, or whether it's there are times where he just falls short of closing the deal.
Yeah.
And this was one more example of that. That I kind of left myself, you have a chance to watch it, that I kind of paid attention to that. And that's a microcosm of all what you saw through his experience there.
Yeah, through his whole career. When you talk about C-Web.
Through his entire career, that was an issue. So, and you kind of saw that. So, I think that's something that, you know, it'd be interesting. That was the untold end to the thing. But it'd be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, that 5-5 team. I was about 14, 13 at the time when the 5-5 got it rolling, and I was a Georgetown fan coming up, but the 5-5, man, them black socks and them long shorts, everybody wanted to emulate that, man. Everybody wanted to be that. I think you hit it on the head with your analysis of Chris. I think even within the team, I think you're right. Jalen had a different, I think of the guys from the team, you know, outside of Chris, who I think had the most talent easily, Jalen probably had the most smarts and savvy. And I think that was just because of the way he grew up. You know, he knew how to handle himself. You know, Jalen had that latchkey kid mentality, you know, where like you put Jalen on a street corner in any inner city in the U.S., and he'd be good. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you could say the same for a guy like Chris. You know, Chris would do all right in a lot of places, but there's some places that may eat Chris up. And, you know, though Chris was a smart kid, I think he tried to overcompensate sometimes for the fact that he was, you know, he came from a hardworking family. I wouldn't say his family was wealthy, but he came from a hardworking middle class family. And I think what you had in C-Web was that classic tale of a kid who comes from a nice home, but who kind of, you know, wanted to go the other way just to prove that he could, and he could handle himself like that. That's always the read I got from Weber. You know, watching him as
that. And the other interesting thing is that Jimmy King said something real interesting that, you know, as he talked about, he may have made the greatest sacrifice of anybody on a team like that, you know, in terms of his pro life, because he sacrificed a lot to really fit into the team. So as you guys are reflective, you know, you know, in the sense that, you know, to be a part of that team, everyone had to suppress their game. And that's something that, I mean, people miss with them is that they really did play fundamentally sound. They did share the ball. They were unselfish. They cared about winning or something big.
Yeah, man, that team, again, we can go on and on about that team because that was a serious phenomenon. And also, you got to look at the Big Ten in that era. The Big Ten was much different at that time, man. Like, nowadays, people characterize the Big Ten as unathletic, grinds it out. The Big Ten was the Big Ten was more like the Big East is now back then. When you think about what the Big East is, where you got athletes, but they play a tough brand of basketball. Mm-hmm. Every night's a battle. That's what the Big Ten was like back then, where you had Purdue, had some great teams. Illinois was had some nice teams. Indiana was still a powerhouse back then. You know, the Big Ten was loaded back then. And that team ran through it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Ohio State team with Funderburk and that they played against. I mean, that team with Jimmy on there.
Mm-hmm.
You think about that Ohio State team that was real good that they beat is, I mean, the Big Ten had a lot of quality, had a lot of depth. In some ways, people thought that the Big Ten was going to be somewhat like that this year. In terms of the depth and the quality of the teams. And they haven't quite all delivered as of yet. But, yeah, the Big Ten was the place back then, you know, had the stars, had folks who were putting it together. And for those freshmen to do it in that league said a lot. You know, like you said, that would be like five freshmen running in the Big East is it today.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that I noticed a lot when we were going back with the footage. You know, things like that just bring back old. You're like, man, I forgot all about that.
Right.
I didn't realize they were playing back then. You know,
that's
stuff that just brings back when you start to look at stuff like that. You're like, wow. But, yeah, it was an incredible era and kind of helped shape, you know, even the tournament and the energy of the tournament.
Yeah.
Taking on a new life. The tournament over that next period got hot.
It really did.
You know, and morphing in what we see now, you know, exciting.
I mean, because you had your Michigan team, and people felt a certain way about Michigan in the 5-5. You had teams like Duke, who to this day, my Duke hatred is unwavering. You know what I'm saying? Like my hatred for Duke is unwavering, and it was because of my allegiance to Georgetown and my like of the Rebels and my like of the Wolverines that I can't mess with Duke like that. Duke has had maybe like three or four players that I could even tolerate.
And Cincinnati had Van Exel. I mean,
yeah.
Talk about in that whole squad was going.
Oh yeah, with Huggins was Huggins squad. Yeah.
Yeah. They brought a whole bunch in. Yeah, and if you liked them, I mean, they were all anti to Duke.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. It's Leighton. I watched Leighton on an old film and just like, man, I don't like him.
Yeah. I mean, Grant Hill, I like. Grant Hill gets a pass from me. Who else? Elton Brand gets a pass from me. Man, that's really all the Duke players I mess with right there. I like Luol Deng. I like Luol Deng. Luol is cool with me, and that's about it. Them the only guys I could even tolerate from Duke. You know,
I almost
wrote off Elton after a bad fantasy season, man. I picked him with my first pick, and he was a bust 1 year. I was about done with Elton after that.
I like Duke in the early years with Amaker and Dawkins, and back then I liked Duke much better back then with Allery and some of those cats.
Yeah,
I was good to go with that. You know, that was actually when Billis played.
Yeah,
a little bit. I mean, I could roll with that a little bit. Yeah, then they got real highfalutin.
Yeah, they did, wrong. Didn't they?
Everybody took sociology. Try to fool folks. And they take a sociology. They really doing it. I'm like, okay, I know a faculty member who taught that undergraduate program. Don't get it twisted. If I took sociology, I'm just a hand out there.
Yeah, any Duke fans want to call in and defend your school, man, or at least give us your perspective on explain to me why you like Duke, because I can't really understand why anybody would be a Duke fan.
I'm surprised Mo Red didn't call in. He's a Duke fan. I don't understand.
Oh, please call in, Mo. Please call in. 1-347-989-0844. Call in. Please explain to me how can you root for Duke? I don't understand it.
And having said that, you're going to be disappointed with my picks as we go through.
Oh, don't tell me you dipping. You drank the Kool-Aid. You drank the Kool-Aid.
I'm going to build the rationale. You know I always got it behind there. I guess as we transition in, there's a lot of conversation about the selection this year. In some ways, when you looked at it, you didn't think it was going to be much of an issue at all. It was, as people have been saying, it was a soft bubble. You could kind of figure out where teams would be positioned. And then you had a couple teams get in that everybody thought shouldn't have gotten in. It led to a lot of discussion about how the selection is being made. What's your feeling about the whole selection process? I don't know how much you've had a chance to reflect on that, but
I think, the selection process, it is what it is. It's a mystery right now. And to me, I think that's what rubs people the wrong way, is that there isn't a whole lot of continuity to why certain teams get picked over other teams. And people have a hard time with that ambiguity. Because I do myself, it would be easy if the committee would just come out and say, this is the important thing. Like, strict the schedule. That's the most important thing. Then ADs and coaches can set their schedules around strength of schedule. And they can think about strength of schedule when they're planning their season. But because there isn't any clarity as to how that process goes, every year you're going to have some people with some butt hurt because they team didn't get picked. Seth Greenberg, on the outside looking in, again.
Again, I cannot believe it. I was so sure Virginia Tech was going to get in. I could not believe.
I wasn't surprised it didn't get in because the ACC just wasn't strong. I looked at that like the ACC was real down this year. And didn't nobody say nothing.
Yeah, but I could see that. But I think they had enough quality wins to get in the tournament. And I thought this was a year that you could have made a case for two teams from the Ivy League to get in. You could have made a case for Harvard to get in. I mean, Harvard had some quality wins, had a quality season. You rarely would say that. But in this season, you could make a case for Harvard to get in. I mean, I know they struggled tonight. I don't know how it ended up. But that's what happens when sometimes when the air comes out, then you got to get on the plane and go to play Oklahoma State. You just can't get up for it. But it's hard to see how they made certain cases for certain teams. But, yeah, I mean, Seth, at some point you're going to have to just figure out how to win, man. I've never seen a team, a Virginia Tech, has more bad luck than anybody in that tournament.
For real, man. I thought they'd been making it. I was like, damn. They really going to do it like that? It's got to be like that.
To the semis, right, or the ACC tournament. I mean, they made a little run. I was for sure. I was like, okay, this is what's going to end for him.
Yeah,
He might have been having an extra drink that night.
Oh, yeah, he might have had a couple, man. He might have had a couple. He might have drank with his players that night.
Which wouldn't have been a good thing to do. I don't even know how you explain it at that point. But what they don't have in this process, what I'm understanding, is they don't have many basketball minds, any retired basketball coaches.
But Doug Gottlieb, and he was on Mike and Mike, and he had a real astute analysis of that. And I agree with him 100% when he said it. He said that you don't want basketball guys in there because they all got connections and they all are buddy-buddy and they all are friends. And they all going to try to do their buddies a solid. And because they all going to try to do their buddies a solid, you can't really have basketball guys. Because like Bob Knight is Mr. Clean Cut, run your program the right way, but yet he going to go to bat for Jim Tressel. You know what I mean? Goes against everything that Bob Knight's been about since Bob Knight has been Bob Knight, but yet he going to ride out for Jim Tressel. Because they're friends, because it's his alma mater. And so, you don't need that in the room because that's just going to make it even more suspect.
But you got to find a system that's better than if you're the commissioner, anytime you discuss a team in your league, you got to go. And if you're an AD, as long as you're not discussing your team, you can stay. I think that's still the same effect. If I'm the
and that's why I think they got to figure out something that's going to be. That's why I think they got to figure out what's most important.
Yeah.
Because if there's something quantitative that's most important, you can look at that and say, okay, well, this. You know what I'm saying? Like this is what's up. Like it's strength of schedule. So we're looking at strength of schedule. Who has the highest strength of schedule? That's the most important thing. And you can be more arbitrary about it. But I think again, it's too nebulous right now as to how folks is going. You know, who gets in and who don't.
I mean, what, Colorado beat Texas, beat Kansas State 3 times?
Yeah.
And doesn't get in?
Right.
And we get, how many teams get 3 or 4 teams from Conference USA? Conference USA ain't been good since Puffy had a good album. I mean, come on. You know, Conference USA ain't probably been good since Van Exel was playing.
Right.
Van Exel. I'm trying to get a feel for it. And it's like, how does that happen? And so when you look at the analysis of it, it's like, who was in the room? Who had to leave? Who was in the room? And you got to control that because you just can't miss like you missed this year. I mean, other years we said, yeah, you could get that. But it seemed like there's some very clear misses. And you're right. You got to say there's winning. Because right now it's not clear if winning a conference championship matters.
Right.
Winning a conference championship matters, and how does winning a tournament matter? And then, like you said, RPI, everybody says it doesn't matter, but yet you got to use it to really think about everything else. You got to figure out how many wins you have against the top 50. You got to figure out, you know, these things got to fall in somewhere, you know. And so that's the part that I struggle with right now. But having said that, that usually talks about teams in the bottom who ain't got a chance to win anyway. So,
right.
And then the seeding sometimes don't make a lot of sense, but, you know, You do your drawing and you go from there.
Right.
So have you had a chance to look at the brackets?
Oh, of course. You know, I got my bracket filled out. You know, I got my bracket filled out. And, you know, I do my bracket and I go through. So when I do my bracket, I do it all at once. I don't second guess. I don't research. I just go by what I know and I roll from there. Like, I watch enough basketball where I'm not finna go looking up, you know, VCU's stats and who's on their roster. I'm just rolling with what I know. And so I always do that. That's how I've always done my brackets, and that's how I always do my brackets. You know, I just go from what's in it. I just go from right off the cuff, right out, straight out the mental Rolodex. I pull out my files, you know, right there on site, and I roll with it. And I just do a little data search. And so.
Do you have any guiding principles?
Do I have any guiding principles? My guiding principles do not. What I realized thinking about this is that my guiding principles do not apply this year.
Okay.
Because college basketball is so watered down right now as far as player talent that what I usually go by doesn't really work because I usually go by veteran backcourts. I usually go by the pro ratio, how many pros is going to be on that, how many pros on that particular team. And I still try to use that formula. But the guys who are pros, there ain't enough of them. You know, the guys who would be standout guards, the rest of the team is subpar. So, this year I kind of went by what I know about the team, how they've done this season, and how I think they'll do. And how battle tested that particular team has been. So it's interesting how my Final Four turned out because again I don't come in it with when I start to fill it out I get going and then I go by matchup from there. After the first round I go by matchup from there and I'm looking at matchups and then I just play it out how I think those two teams will play out. So I don't start out with a set Final Four like some people will start out with. I got these four teams in my Final Four. No matter what, these are the four teams I think am going to win it. I usually don't go about it that way. I kind of start with my first round. I look at the matchups after that, and then I just go matchup for matchup from there on, and I go by who I think will win that particular game, that individual game. So I got a real interesting Final Four this year. I got two number ones. I got a 3 seed, and I got a 4 seed. I'm not going to give no names. But I just tell you, I got two number ones, I got a 3 seed and a 4 seed in my Final Four.
And I got to, as I'm, my computer's warming up here, and so I'm trying to figure out, I got to get back in. But I'm trying to see if I can use my iPhone to help me get to where I need to be. I got a number one. So hold on a second. Trying to see what I got out of that side. I got number one coming out of that region. And number one out of that region, I believe. I'll have to look at that. Try to get to the other side here. Okay. This thing is messing with me. Trying to go over here one more time. I'm using my iPhone now until I can figure out what I got going on here. So I got number one out of one region. I'm trying to get on the other side. Uh-oh. Not working. Okay. One there. Hold on a second. So you had a one, and a what?
I had two ones, a three, and a four.
So my thing is moving slow here. So I think I had three ones, and then I think down here it must be a four, but I can't pull it down as soon as I get down there. But I'll talk about my guiding principles. I look for teams that play, that's a style that's hard for people to prepare for on a short turnaround. And I look for teams that I think who can still win when they're not scoring well. So I'll give you an example. I mean, the year that I picked Michigan State, it was pretty clear. That's a team I felt that could play when they won the national championship, could play even when they weren't having a good shooting night. They did enough good other things that would get them over the hump. Because they won a national championship, you're going to have a game or two in which your A game is not there. You just have to grind it out and figure out how to win. And that's why I used to always pick against Duke, because Duke was so much more outside in their approach, in their attacking, that they played a kind of style that in tournament time, when every shot mattered, would be a tough thing to sustain. They could get through the first couple rounds. When they start beating good teams, you can't just get away with that. Could they beat you another way? And for a long time, Coach K had teams that if you really looked at them, they came with a lot of hype but no substance. They couldn't beat you a different way. They weren't going to play on the inside. They didn't really have a way to play in the paint and win on nights when they weren't going to score well from the outside. And so looking for teams who can do that, and then those teams, that's where a team like a Wisconsin becomes a different type of team in a couple of years where they made a run, because it's a tough team to play for, to prepare for, or like a Syracuse. It's a style that you don't see all the time, and it's tough to adjust. It's hard to practice for, it's hard to adjust for, and it's a hard style to prepare for on a turnaround night when you only got two nights to prepare. So I try to get a sense for some things like that and try to assess, you know, who can make a run. And then do you got somebody who can be a potential difference maker down the stretch? You know, do you have a guy that could get the hot hand and can be a closer when you need it? So I try to get a sense for that. And you got some teams for which that's something that you can see that kind of stands out. And so that's kind of how I judge, you know, who can do what, when, and kind of where.
Okay. So you said earlier you kind of hinted that you had Duke. So you think this Duke team can? Because I don't think they can get baskets late, man. I think they're a jump shooting team. The only guy that they have who gets anything not off jump shots, you know, other than their bigs, and they don't get very much on their own. The bigs don't. It's Nolan Smith.
What they do, this team does do, even though they screen a roll and get to the basket better,
mm-hmm.
but they also, their bigs rebound. So before, they used to play from the outside in, and their bigs weren't really physical. Their bigs didn't really rebound. They didn't battle. these bigs that they have actually, they get to the glass. You watch them, they rebound, they keep possessions alive, they're physical. So that, to me, that's a difference in this team. It feels more like one of his earlier Duke teams than he has in recent years. I think for a long time he went to this, for some reason, you know, this kind of spacing, playing from the outside in, a lot of, you know, driving and kick. He still has some elements of that, but I don't think he recruited well with guys who could just rebound. And it seems like he got a better rebounding presence with this team than he's had in years past. I felt more comfortable. I really don't buy into Duke at all, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Two teams I never really bought into is Duke and Kansas. And for some reason this year, I feel much better about those two teams than I ever have in the past.
I agree. I'm in that boat on one of those teams, and y'all know it ain't Duke.
Everybody used to buy the Kool-Aid on those two teams. And up until South came and kind of broke through, Kansas always teased you.
Yeah.
They always had great stars, but they.
But see that, and there's a consistent factor with what happened. What you say happened? A different coach came in there.
Yeah.
And because that coach is somewhere else, that's how I feel about that team now. I'm not buying into it.
So you say you got buying into Carolina, huh?
Hell no.
Nah, I can't buy into that. They start too damn slow.
Right. The guard play is suspect.
If you rank in the number ones, I think you're vulnerable. Pitt seen that movie.
Yeah.
They can't score. They can't get after it. They're going to be physical, but they just don't seem like they got a cat that's just going to close the deal. So, I mean, they got somebody. So those number ones, I don't see. I actually... And I'm home a little bit on this, but everybody's predicting to lose. I think Bo going to pull it together. I think Wisconsin going to be a weird matchup for folks. I like what they might bring to the table.
And see, I usually go with that, but this year I'm a little cool on the Badgers this year. And the reason being is because of that same reason that I'm usually cool on a team like Duke or like the past Duke teams, is that the Badgers rely too much on that perimeter shot. They don't get baskets on the block. You know, their best post-up offensive player is Jordan Taylor. You know, their point guard. They don't get enough baskets. And what I've been telling people about this team all year is that if they're shooting well, they can beat anybody. If they're shooting poorly, they can get beat by anybody. You know, and that's how I feel about this team. And in the tournament.
The only team I can see that could give them, that I think they could frustrate Kansas State. Utah State might be a tougher draw for them. I think Belmont is going to give them. I think they'll stretch out. Everybody's talking Belmont. Everybody wants to play Belmont.
Well, who is? Because that's the one thing that the Cornell last year was the only team I ever seen out white boy Wisconsin. Cornell straight out white boy the last year. Hit jumpers, back cutting. You know what I'm saying? Making textbook bounce passes. Nobody usually can out white boy Wisconsin, but Cornell got him. That's why I'm asking. What is the racial makeup of Belmont's team?
I don't know. You know, Belmont was in Nashville. It has to come. I got to look at the map on some of these teams. And everybody's talking about Belmont, and I, you know, for me, I haven't done enough research. I don't go that deep.
Yeah, I don't go that deep either, man. It's Belmont.
I've been to college games if they did a lot of it. I'm not going as deep as I used to.
Yeah.
Out of that region, when I look at teams, they've been sleeping and they haven't done what they needed to do all year. But I say watch for Gonzaga. I say watch for Michigan State. They made a little bit of run here late in the season. They're starting to wake up a little bit. They had that little hangover when they had to make the decision on the kicking off. Who did they kick off one summer? Did they kick off?
Lucius. Yeah, boy from Milwaukee. Wisconsin kid. I was sad to see that.
This is what we do. Get your act together. Now you're going to come back to play back and play at UWM. Do what you need to do.
Right. Now, I think he went to Iowa State.
Middle of damn Iowa. Well, you're going to stay out of trouble.
I think it's some other kids. Iowa State must got a Milwaukee connection because they got a couple of kids out of Milwaukee, seniors this year coming out there. So
they got to do something.
Yeah, they got some sort of pipeline that they're building.
In that Southeast, I'm like, you got the coaches, because I think for what you said about the players and what you describe it, sometimes great coaches matter in some of this stuff.
I agree.
Certainly that you talked about. And I think Izzo, this was a team that was ranked in, what, in the top five at the beginning
yep.
of the season. So they got
yep.
some talent. You know, they finally, I think, they look like they've been putting stuff together towards the end of the season. I think that's a team just to kind of watch out going into the tournament, you know. And I think they could, when I look around, I look at what they have around them in terms of getting out of there. I think they
yeah,
can take a little run.
And I'm kind of cool on Michigan State, too, and I'll tell you why. I'm cool on Michigan State because I think their problems go beyond basketball. I think they have some chemistry issues. I don't think they believe in each other. And I think that's a recipe for disaster. Like, because they got the talent. There's no doubt about it, they got the talent. But you and I both know you've seen teams with a ton of talent, but when the guys don't like each other, when they're not getting along, when they don't trust each other, when they feel like they eat, you know, when there's a selfish atmosphere, it seems like that's what they got going on. When you got guys complaining about the ball, you know, making all types of off-the-cuff comments about their teammates in the press. You don't usually don't get that in college when you have guys making – college guys usually don't go there because, you know, you live with your teammates in college.
Yeah.
You know, in the pros, you may be able to get away from your teammates and do your own thing. But in college, you basically live with your teammates. So
And I agree with that. But then, I mean, I think Florida's overrated at a number two seed.
I agree. I don't know what the – Florida's been off my radar. I didn't even think they deserved no two seed. Yeah, I was shocked.
Somebody was sipping Champelli when they were trying to vote for this one. You know, I don't even want to get into the seeding, but when you look at that little cluster, if you want to close your eyes and not look at the seeding, I started looking at it, and I'm thinking, Izzo can out-coach everybody in that damn cluster.
Oh, hell yeah.
So, except for the UCLA one makes me nervous. If they can get out of that one, they got to, you know – UCLA starting to rebound a little bit.
Yeah, I ain't been buying UCLA in a couple of years, man. I don't know what happened out there, but Howland just don't seem like he got no horses.
Yeah, and they flying across. I don't know where they play in that game, man. I'm trying to figure out where they play in that game.
UCLA is playing in Tampa.
Yeah, so
UCLA and Michigan playing in
down.
Tampa.
Yeah, they got to fly across the country to get that thing done. Yeah, that region, if you're going to win the tournament, if you're going to win your pool, that Southeast can win you the pool. Because there's
yeah.
so many different combinations to come out of there. St. John's, you know, that's why I think the Gonzaga could be an upset for St. John's. But, you know, again, St. John's could go on right. I mean, that Southeast could win somebody the pool. If you can get this Southeast right, somebody's pool is going to be straight. You can get that going.
Yeah.
So who? I'm not gonna, cause I know you don't want to talk about who you buying, or do you want to talk about who you buying?
No, I can talk about who I'm buying.
So who's your? Give me somebody that you got to watch out for. That's not a top three seed.
It's not a top three seed. Somebody you got to watch out for. I like Georgetown. I'm a Georgetown fan, so I'll admit that bias. But this team was one of the best teams in the country before Chris Wright got hurt. Chris Wright got hurt. They go into the tank for a little bit. Well, he's back. So that's a team that I think people forgot about. They have a pretty favorable little pie with Notre Dame, Texas A&M, Florida State, Purdue. Notre Dame, they know well. They've seen them before. So I think, you know, that helps out because that's basically a conference game. I think they match up real well with Purdue. They got a better team than Purdue. So I would like them against Purdue. So I feel like Georgetown has an opportunity to advance a lot further than a lot of people may think. So Georgetown is a team that I think I have as a sleeper. Then I'm on Gonzaga like you are. I'm not gonna say how far I got them going, but I got them getting out the first weekend.
I'm with that. I think people have been sleeping on the Big Ten. And so maybe I'm a little home on that. Georgetown to me feels like the new Kansas. New
and they might be. I don't got them going all the way.
Yeah.
But I got them getting further than I think a lot of people think.
And the fact of the matter is they don't know who they're going to play until, you know, until Wednesday. I've been looking at that Georgetown, that little cluster right there, and trying to figure out how I wanted to play it. But, yeah, Georgetown, I had Purdue going on a little run there because they got a couple players that just and Purdue don't put a couple flash on a couple folks this year. They got some players who could do some damage. But I agree. I mean, Georgetown could be that team. Who's your other team?
The other team that Washington.
Washington, I like Washington.
Yeah, I like Washington. I like Zeke too. Isaiah Thomas. I like him. They got some nice wings, and they have a decent post player in Brian. Brian Amening, that dude. He looked nice. I watched him a couple of times this year, and I saw them in the Pac-10 championship game. And you know, I like what they did to Arizona. Arizona's a team that I like too, and I like how they played Arizona and what they did to Arizona. So I like Washington too. So Washington and Georgetown are kind of the teams that I think, you know, people need to be looking out for as we get into this tournament. I think that those are two teams that are going to catch people off guard.
And I noticed Kruger is at UNLV, the UNLV against Illinois. That's my backstory. I noticed that they, you know, every once in a while they create those stories, right?
Yeah, they do that. They'll do that.
That's gonna have a nice little storyline around that one, and see how they. UNLV is kind of trying to come back on the scene a little bit. They'd be an interesting team to see.
Yeah, but they ain't got that swag.
No, they don't have the swag, though.
They don't have the hot tubs either. Yeah, exactly.
they don't have the pictures of them in the hot tubs. You know, they must have taken the hot tubs off the residence halls. So you're not gonna give your final picks, are you?
I mean, I can.
We're gonna make people.
We trying to have people. We got this competition going, man.
Yeah.
If we didn't have a competition going, I'd give them up right away. I don't have a problem with that because I know I'm right. But I don't want people to be biting my picks. You know, I want people to be biting my picks, and then they're like, I beat Game Changer. I came up with the picks first. Nah. It ain't that easy, son.
Because we got a keeper of the prizes. And if you can get through us, you can get the prize.
And this ain't like no gift certificate to Famous Footwear type of prize.
These are real types of prizes. These are real prizes. These mean you might have to wear some nice shorts because you might be going to wear warm. That's how we roll on Real Sports Guys. So we
roll.
To make it real huge kind of thing. So if you're not in, you out. We're trying to see who are the real folks on this one. So we're not gonna go too deep into this. I agree with you, Game Changer. People gotta come to the site, sign in, and you will see the picks. And we'll talk about them. You know, after the first weekend, how we did and where we going. That's what we're talking about.
But one thing I do want to give me your top five players in this tournament right now. Give me your top five players in this tournament. Individual players. You know what I mean? Because I think that's something that both of us factor into our picks is the guys we feel are game changers. You know, they're the adjective, not the noun. You know, they're game changers, you know, guys who are out there who can have a major impact as individuals and carry a team to victory. Who are your top five guys?
Well, let me, because I'm trying to still make my way into my picks. I might let you go first, and then I can look at where I'm at with my picks. To kind of talk about how I might break my top five down. So I'm still trying to make it into the site to see how I actually, because I think I'm guessing right now, so I want to make sure I get my picks right. But why don't you go, and then I will bring mine in.
Well, one is Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker, is a monster. That boy, the boy from Pittsburgh, McGee, I still think that boy is somewhere looking for his for his ankles, for the tendons in his ankles, because, whoo, that step back move was bad that he put on him. But I mean, Kemba had a hell of a stretch in that Big East tournament. I just don't know how much he got left in the tank.
I was wondering how much he had in the tank.
Yeah, and that's what I think is going to hold UConn back, because to win it all, you know, they have to win 11 straight games. And they could do it, but the probability of them doing it is not huge. So, you know, but Kemba Walker is one of those guys that I think is a guy who can take over a game by himself and really do some damage. Another one of those guys, unfortunately, I don't really don't like the family, but the Hansborough boy out in Notre Dame, he's shown me a lot this year. I got to watch Notre Dame probably 4 or 5 times. And every time I watched him play, he made big shot after big shot after big shot. And I was waiting on him to choke at some point, and he never did, you know. So the Hansborough boy, Ben Hansborough out of Notre Dame, I think is a guy who can get hot and carry his team for a couple of games with his three-point shooting ability. This is kind of a two-for-one with Kansas and the Morris boys. Those are two. Those guys are going. Those they remind me of the Grants, yeah. Horace and Harvey. You know, they both do a lot of the same similar things, but they both got some things where, you know, they each kind of excel a little bit more than the other. So those dudes you know, those two more guys I really like. And then the last guy I really think is going to have a real big impact on this tournament is the kid from Texas. He's kind of my under-the-radar kid. Jordan Hamilton. Dude's got a lot of talent. Dude's got a lot of game. And I think he's going to make this his coming out party in the tournament. I think by the end of the tournament, people are going to know who he is. I watched him play a couple of times, and I've really been impressed. He has some problems with shot selection every now and then, but he's a sniper, and that's what snipers do. They shoot. So those are the five guys I think are going to have a major impact. So, yeah.
And I'm still pulling everything up. But I would say, obviously, Morris from the Morris brothers from Kansas, I just think that it's the 1-2 punch. And again, what I like about Kansas is that they feel like a team that can play whatever style they need to play to win. And I'm not a huge like I said, I've never been a huge Kansas fan. I just never have been that kind of guy. But for some reason, I feel good about this team. This team has overcome a lot, even with injury, and kind of been focused a little bit. I think they're gonna go on a deep run because of that focus.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't believe I'm saying it because I like Kansas a lot in this one, and a lot is because I think those two brothers are interchangeable, they push a lot of havoc on it. When I think about and I got to go back and justify my Duke selection. It seems like that was Urban or whatever, that point guard might be getting a little healthier.
I saw that a minute ago. I was like, oh snap,
you know. And so, and I don't know how that's going to play out in terms of the tournament, in terms of what that, you know, in terms of play and how that's going to be in terms of rotation. But I think that what I like about them is that they got some senior leadership, and I think that's the number one thing that will work well for them is that they got some senior leadership. And to me, that's at least the most important thing in a tournament where you don't have, that much leadership usually on a team that's talented. And so they got the experience from last year. And so I think that for me, rather than just individual players, because they do come with their player of the year candidate, but I think they got enough experience from last year, and I think that's going to play out well for them this year. On Ohio State, I think in the part I like about Ohio State is their ability to space. Mm-hmm. I like Diegler, actually. And I haven't been a big fan of him, and not as a leading role person.
Yeah.
Someone who I think makes big shots and does big things that is not always, even though he gets hyped for his range and stuff like that, I watch him play, and I think he brings a lot of intangible pieces that are going to get them over the hump in a way that I think would be special for them. I'm still not as confident that as Thad Matta as a coach. And I don't know why. I think I should be, but sometimes I feel like he kind of like I'm not gonna put Roy Williams into that mix because he's won one, but he feels like Roy before Roy won. It's just kind of like sometimes is he ready for the moment?
He gets a ton of talent, but.
Yeah.
He don't never win nothing.
He doesn't close the deal.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know how to do it, but I like the way, and I've been watching D-Way. See, I think they get a little carried away. I still think, I'm partial. Glenn Rice is the greatest shooter. So they get sometimes they get crazy in terms of just range with D-Way. But I think he does things that, for me, that make me, feel pretty good about it. Another kid that I think is, I don't know if he's going to, I'm not comfortable with the team yet, but you can't underrate what Barnes did for Carolina. I don't know if I have Carolina going far, but he hit 40. I know he only has like 16 in the championship game against Duke. But if that kid, as a freshman, because everybody kind of criticized him. Everybody's like, how are you going to give a freshman preseason All-American?
Yeah.
But that 40-point performance, he shot like 6 of 8 from the field. He had his clown suit on, like big time. And I think I like to see kind of what he brings to the table. But I haven't had a chance to really watch him, but I watched him in that game. And he's the kind of cat that could be a difference maker in the tournament. Now, I've been trying to work on in terms of trying to figure out, I've been watching St. John's, and I'm not quite sure what to make of them. Obviously they have, they had what I would consider a player of the year type candidate in Hardy. When I'm watching St. John's, I think in Hardy, and St. John's fits that bill that I'm talking about. It's a team that's kind of a grinded. They got a guy that can deliver in clutch time. They got a coach who's been there before, but a guy like Hardy, who easily is. I don't know, and I didn't see who won the Player of the Year in the Big East. Did Kemba win that?
No, it was Hansborough.
No, Hansborough won it.
Yeah.
Hardy put up some numbers. And you think about what St. John's did. I like St. John when I watch him play.
Yeah.
But I like Hardy. Hardy delivers. And I like the way he plays. He's another guy that I like a lot. But when as I look at some of these teams, I am just caught up into the kind of more of the matches. The other team that is kind of interesting to me, and I haven't had a chance to see who their stars are, but I watched them play a couple times. But I know their roster as much as I need to in Missouri. That's a team that I think can do some things. I think it's a dark horse for me in a sense. But I think I look at kind of how things are set up and laid out. I think Missouri could do some stuff. But those are some of the players and then some of the teams I think are going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a good tournament, man. It's going to be one of those years, again, where you can't really predict it. You don't really know how it's going to play out. You know. Go ahead.
What's your opinion on Kentucky?
Man, I don't trust Kentucky. I think Cal is going to go back to being old Cal. He don't have an anomaly, one of those guys who is just better than everybody else in a John Wall that he had last year. I think he has a decent team, but I always question Cal's ability to coach.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I don't know about this squad. You know, I don't trust them. I don't have them getting very far. I have them winning a game or two, but I don't have them getting when it's just the big boys left. I don't have Kentucky being able to compete.
And it seems like, you know, like Brandon, I mean, some of these players have just been up and down. They've scored. They play well down the stretch, but they seem like they haven't been as consistent. And I think that's where with Calipari and people's question about X and O and stuff like that is and the other team we didn't talk about at all is San Diego State. Given what we talked about the Fab Five, Fish is back in the mix again.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah, I've only seen them play once.
Yeah.
They're real athletic, but I didn't feel like I got a good a real solid read on them yet.
Yeah. I'm interested in doing that. I haven't had a chance to really – and because they play on the West Coast, you don't get a chance to get a lot on what they're doing.
Right.
But I think that's a team that could be
– And why is that? Why is there still a West Coast bias in 2011? Like, there ain't all types of media outlets out there. Like, it's not 1930.
I don't know. I mean, if you think about even the strong teams, we talked about this before, you know, who are the elite teams right now coming into the tournament? Mostly East Coast, you know, you got Kansas in the Midwest, you got Texas, who's inconsistent. You don't know what you're going to get out of Texas. You know, but for the most part, you got mostly East Coast teams dominating
right.
the tournament.
Right.
And so you think about, you know, Arizona, UCLA is kind of coming back into the mix. BYU, but, you know, they're more fluff than substance. I mean, you're starting – Gonzaga's kind of down for Gonzaga.
Right.
You know, I see Northern Carolina, Colorado's here. You see Santa Barbara. You know, but none of these teams are household name. Utah State, everybody's giving us love, a little bit of run there. But, you know, mostly it's kind of Midwest to East. And so, you know, some of your traditional powers are not there. Like Arizona hasn't been good since, you know, like at the level of Arizona, since Luke, you know, the whole situation there. And so,
right.
you know, so you think that you take them out, and you know, UCLA's kind of having some down years. You know, USC's been, you know, all right, you know, up and down, you know, had their issues.
Right, when they can stay off probation.
Yeah, can't stay off probation. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, and then Oregon got rid of the brother from Rockford.
Ernie Kent.
Yeah, you know, and so, you know, he had a recruiting thing going out there, and then Washington's been up and down. They've kind of been there, way on the radar. But, yeah, so you look at the West Coast, man, Utah has been really good since Majerus.
Yeah.
You know, UNLV is going to come back. Like you said, it's not that I don't think the media catches it. There's no compelling story.
Yeah.
Like, the story out there is San Diego State really kind of like, you know, and Fisher kind of being tied to this Fab Five, but I don't see a compelling story coming out of the West.
Now, overall, though, this season hasn't been real compelling, in my opinion. I mean, there are no real superstars. I mean, the closest thing I think you have to a guy who is a superstar, I think, is Kemba Walker. And that's just because he stepped up at big moments. But, you know, he's also disappeared for stretches during the season. You know, listening to the sports radio, people talk about, oh, there needs to be a rule change with the one and done. Do you think the one and done is really having that major of an effect on the quality of player that's out there?
You know, I think it's been interesting because I heard some folks talking about, you know, I think Colin Cowherd talked about this a lot. It's like, you know, let the market bear, you know, let kids go in and let a couple kids struggle. And even the ones who struggle end up playing overseas and making pretty good money. I would like to see something like this. You either go to the pros out of high school or you come to college and you're here for 3 years. That's your choice.
Mm-hmm.
Either come to college, you're here for 3 years. And that allows for people to have continuity. What this has done is it's allowed for mid-majors and other folks to compete on an equal level because you have veteran squads who can do it. It's allowed for those squads. You know, it's allowed for Harvard to be Harvard. You know
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? So in that sense, it's provided some kind of competitive balance. But, you know, what I would probably opt for, and I think without really thinking this through, is that you make a decision. So you can go directly from high school, but if you decide to go to college, you're in for three or in for
mm-hmm.
two. I think you got to give some continuity to the program. I think one and done, it doesn't allow for continuity. Or you just, you know, I think either do 2 years or 3 years, and then or you go straight into the league.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the NBA, I don't think has really been a cooperative partner around this, and I think
mm-hmm.
that's part of the struggle. And I think it's hurt the value of the NBA in terms of players coming in and being able to play at that level. I think Reggie Miller was saying, he's been talking to a lot of young players, and saying there's a lot that you learn about playing. The part that is missing is the leadership part, because people underrate that. And what
right.
you learn in college is how to become a leader.
Right.
And so you're not only a great player, but you also learn to lead. And I think that's what Tim Duncan got when he stayed in when he was at Wake.
Uh-huh.
That he learned how to lead. And so when he went to the league, it was easy for him to fit right in and help lead San Antonio. And I think players are missing out on there. And that can equal dollars.
Yeah.
You win. And so I think, yeah, my thing is I'd love to see that addressed because I think there should be some commitment to the program and continuity of the program. That's something that I think should happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll see. There's so much money involved in this, man, and anytime money's in there. You know, the one good thing about it is no matter what the product is, something happens in March Madness that makes it compelling.
Oh, absolutely.
Realize, you know, anytime you pull a ball out in the middle of it and it's a one-and-done competition, anything can happen. And that's what we can expect to happen with this run. That, you know, even though the overall talent is probably not where people want to see it, when you start putting that storyline, it's going to emerge, things are going to happen, and, you know, there's going to be a buzz by Monday.
and you know it. And that's the beauty about it, man. That's why it's basketball Christmas.
Yeah, that's right.
It's basketball Christmas, man. Like, if you're a basketball fan, you know, again, I tell people all the time, if you know, college basketball is more about atmosphere and antics as far as the basketball goes.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you love basketball, you still got to love the tournament because there's still a lot of good games. There's still a lot of theater, drama. It's all there. It's all there. And even if you don't like basketball, you know, the secretary be cleaning clocks in these office pools, man. The secretary, she be rolling the dice. If it's a two, I'm picking Old Dominion. If it's an odd number, I'm going with Butler. You know what I mean? And they be cleaning up, but it gives them a reason to watch. It gives even the most casual of fans a reason to get engaged. People that don't know nothing about basketball can get into the tournament. And that's the beauty of the tournament. It's the perfect platform to just draw people in for a couple of weeks.
And, you know,
And I think it's back to what I was saying before. I mean, it's going to come down to, you know, to some coaches doing what, you know, they can do. You know, I'm thinking, you know, look about what's happening in Louisville, and you look at that team. I look at that team, and it's just they got to work to win, but you got to feel a Capino might put something together, you know, for a couple of rounds. I mean, that's what the compelling story is going to be. I mean, this really allows for coaches to have a greater imprint on this than they probably would have had. And so I think that's what I like about it is that, you know, you can really make a difference if you have your team prepared, if you can really do the, you can make a run in this tournament if you know how to organize a team for this experience. I mean, I think that's what I loved about, you know, Fisher used to talk about creating mini tournaments. So when they won the national championship, he created all these mini tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And we're playing in this tournament this weekend. And so really made it. So you just think about the creativity and how coaches actually shrink this for their players in a way that get them to really focus on the moment and not to get caught up in the big thing. That's the kind of stuff I enjoy hearing about. Because in this day and age, that's going to make a difference. If, you know, because there's so much parity.
Right.
You know, that can make a difference for you. That's why I say, you know, don't sleep on Izzo.
Yeah, you really can't, man.
He's been lying in the weeds. He's been struggling all year.
This is a hard bracket to pick, man.
It's a hard bracket to pick. It all started with him thinking about going to Coach LeBron. He got caught up in the moment, and it's just been downhill from him, and he came back.
You know what, man? I forgot all about that. I straight up have forgotten all about the fact that he was thinking about doing that.
You know, and I think that was part of where he would have been tending home.
Mm-hmm.
That might have been part of the unraveling.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to leave us, you know, because before that, Izzo always had control of his program.
Right.
You never heard this kind of stuff really going. I mean, he might have, but his program was pretty much under control.
Right.
For the most part. And this year is kind of unraveling. I wonder how much it had to do with players like, wow, you know, and just, you know, it's hard probably for him to come back in and get the handle on it. You know, he's riding the ship here lately. But it's that kind of stuff.
Right.
Steve, you know, Lavin coming back and getting into coaching and rebirth of St. John's. Louis Conosaka. And now we got those and the whole game. You know, you just think about, some of these cats down in Louisville. I mean, but just think that whole line of folks. But, you know, St. John's is back in the tournament.
Right.
You know, Queensbridge, you know.
Say it for me. Queensbridge. Say Queensbridge.
Our test going to be all up in there yelling. He's going to be wearing a St. John's hat. You know, to me, that's, you know, that's basketball, man. I miss St. John's. I realize how much I miss them.
Yeah.
And to have Lavin up there throwing it. So there's going to be some good storylines, man, here and seeing how this all plays out.
Yeah.
But the debate of the quality is always going to be there.
Yeah.
Everybody's saying there is no great team. And I think
that's what's going to make it fun. It's going to make it hard to pick, but that's what's going to make it fun to watch.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to destroy your bracket, but at some point you're just going to say, yeah, I messed up. I'm going to throw this bracket away and just watch the games now.
Just watch the game. I'm looking at this stuff, and I'm with you. I'm not going to overanalyze it. I'm going to go with my gut instinct. I'm going to go with what I know about basketball.
Yep. Because you can start looking at Belmont stats and thinking, oh, they got a shot. You start looking at, you know, Bucknell statistics and like, oh, man, Bucknell may do this, man. Bucknell may go all the way. Before you know it, you got Bucknell and you're Elite Eight.
So the crazy thing, that could happen.
Exactly.
It could absolutely happen.
Could
be Kentucky. I mean, I'm looking at these matches and I'm thinking, man, you know, I don't even know. You know, Clemson and West Virginia.
Right.
Clemson, you know, it's just, you know, because they got the ladder up.
Right.
They got the ladder up. They got one game under their belt. You know, that's not really a playing game.
Right.
So yeah, I'm looking at these things and I'm thinking, man, this is gonna be tough. You're right. You can't get caught up too much in all this stuff where you're gonna end up picking Richmond to the Final Four,
right?
And justifying it. That's gonna be it. So let's talk about that NFL.
Yeah, man, let's talk about that. You know, the Players Association decertified last week. The owners still wouldn't open up the books. I think people forget that. You know, I've been listening to a lot of talk radio. We listen to everything that's out there. And, you know, a lot of people forget that the union wanted them to open their books up, and they refused. They don't want to open up the books. So, you know, that's causing a problem. You know, that's causing a problem, so the union decertified. And they called it one, you know, said, hey, we're going to go ahead and take this to court. It is what it is. And y'all just gonna have to deal with it, you know.
Well,
so
I mean, we're talking about what $9 billion. So
yeah,
you know, I think part of what it, and you know, this is whole, you know, we got a theme across America and break the union,
right?
It's kind of been a running theme here, but you know, this is going to come down, you know. What I don't understand is, I don't like the idea that, you know, I'm trying to still figure out how I feel about the players telling these potential draft folks, the first-round draft folks to not go to the draft.
Yeah.
Players. I'm still trying to figure out how I feel about that because, you know, yeah, I understand the labor dispute and all that stuff, but this is also a key moment in a person's life.
Right,
And all those players had a chance to experience that.
Yeah.
And what does that have to do with the labor deal?
Right.
It's symbolic in a lot of ways. So I am struggling with that, but I understand.
Right.
You got to get every edge you can get. The players are using what they can do. D'Amore Smith is not joking. That brother is coming after you. They don't have.
Hey, I got to get D'Amore 10 points for rocking them hats, though, rocking the fedoras.
He's coming with real pimpy ologies with them. He's doing what he needs to do, and you know he's played big boy stuff before. I mean,
yeah,
he
looks like a black George Halas.
Oh yeah, he ain't messing with him like that. He's like going straight for the juggler, Paul. And they don't have that kind of relationship yet. Not like Gene. And had before with Tag LaBue and some of
that. Right.
You know, they haven't built that relationship. And frankly, you got some owners who are used to winning.
Right.
And they felt like they get messed over, which, you know, how I feel about, you know, owners trying to put in rules to protect against themselves when they
can't
try to protect against greed. So it's going to come down. It's going to come down to, you know, I looked at, they talked about trying to get back to the table with the, you know, mediation. I know they don't want it in the court system, but I think that's the only way this deal is going to get done.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to be forced legally to sit down and carve something out. Somehow they're going to find something in the middle.
Yeah.
And what's killing is the free agency. I mean, the team, that's why I said a team like Green Bay is in good shape. So they got a lot of stuff already squared away. They're not the kind of team that builds stuff you trade anyway. They build through the draft. They got all those injured players coming back. So they got such. If I'm Green Bay, I'm like, keep fighting.
Right.
You know, if I'm Green Bay, I'm like, keep fighting. If I'm the Steelers don't do a lot of trades. They work a lot through the draft. They know they get a little older, but they might be able to do some different things. They don't want anybody getting advantages on them. Some of the people who might trade. So some of these teams strategically don't mind the fact that folks can't trade like they want to trade.
Right.
So I mean, there's a lot behind this. There's a lot of layers to this that I'm really kind of paying attention to. But I think the front runner right now is Green Bay. Because
I think the front runner is Green Bay. And I think anybody who's got a bunch of picks. I think New England got a bunch of picks.
Yep.
But I think this is going to work out in their favor. And also, the interesting thing about this is that there's not going to, like, there isn't going to be a, they don't know if there's going to be a wage scale, a rookie wage scale yet. You know, I think most people feel like that's something that is probably for sure going to happen. Because I think if there's a rookie wage scale, a guy like Cam Newton goes first.
Yeah.
Because there isn't that huge investment. So you can justify having him on your roster, sitting him, and not feeling like you're paying him a bunch of money to sit the bench. You know, but I think if there's no rookie wage scale, that's going to prevent teams from being able to make those trades, trade up in the draft. It's going to stop a lot of maneuvering that we would see otherwise. If the deal had been done, if we were operating under the circumstances where we knew exactly what kind of a structure there was going to be around, you know, draft picks.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you sat back and, I mean, the rookie wage scale, you're not going to get any argument over it. I mean, everybody thinks it's the right deal. I mean, that's where the redistribution of the money is going to happen. You know, allow you the strength to keep veteran players. That's going to build in some continuity. And so that part of the process, I think, is that's a no-brainer. So I think they're going to find a way to take care of retired athletes. That's going to happen in this deal. I think those things are going to happen. The 18-game one, you know, I think the owners, they got to figure out if they want 18 games or the money.
Uh-huh.
That's what the owners got to decide on. If the 18 games, they can find a way to leverage 18 games into some other stuff, then go with the 18 games. Because you're not gonna get 18 games and you're going to take another billion.
Right.
That ain't going to work. So, yeah. So unless that's what they're going to have to make a decision on.
Yeah, see, that's why I'm on the side of the players, man. I'm on the side of the players in this situation. You know, I just feel like I can relate to the player situation now more than I never felt like I could relate to the owner situation because I ain't rich. But in this situation, I think the players are not the ones who are initiating this, man. You know, I think this is the owners saying that they want more and they want to get more. And they have the right to do that. And what bothers me is that, you know, the average fan out there, I think, forgets that, like, you know, just as, you know, they say, well, you know, who cares about the health care for these players? They don't have to play football. Right. They don't have to play football, and owners don't have to own NFL franchises. Nobody's putting a gun to their head and saying that you have to do this, you know? And it's the same way, you know? But at the same time, with the players, the owners are trying to take money from these guys. And to me, this is the main reason I side with the players. When you think about it, it's like, what type of price are you going to put on your health?
Yeah.
Because that's what they're doing. You know, they have to get as much out of this as they can. For however long that they're in this league, they have to get as much as they possibly can. Because at the end of the day, they're mortgaging their health, their long-term health. They're taking years off their life, you know. They're injuring their limbs, their body, their joints. So how much is your leg worth to you? You know what I mean? You know, people that say, well, I would play football for this. I don't know about that. I don't know if you would play football for that amount. Because, again, how much is your leg worth to you? How much is your mental health when you're 40? How much is that worth to you? Because those are the types of things that these cats are dealing with when they're considering – you know, whether or not they should give back a chunk of money to billionaires.
And I think that's what's hard for the regular person to understand is that it's about scale and it's about scale. And when you start to create the scale of this business and when it ends, you know, everything raises up versus, you know, you were working in another industry, and it's about demand. You know, this is something we pay for. You can't talk $9 billion if there is a demand for it.
Right.
know, the TV revenue can't be there if they can't guarantee they're going to have the advertising dollars to produce the money in the revenue. All that's driven by eyeballs. So we're driving the product. And so both sides in many ways can play it because they know our eyes are never are not going to go away from the product.
Right.
It's demonstrated that we love it. And so I think, you know, it's going to come down to these two issues. It's going to come down to how bad the owners want 18 games versus the money.
And the other issue, which I haven't heard much about, and I don't know if this is still in play, but it's the revenue sharing. Because that's the other main issue that prior to this whole thing we were hearing about. Now, I don't know if that's been swept under the rug or if that's no longer on the table amongst the owners themselves, but that was the other thing was that, you know, the salary cap structure was going to go away, revenue sharing was going to go away, you know, and we're going to have more of a system sort of like baseball's.
Well, I think in a stance of solidarity, that probably went off the table if they figured they could get more money.
Uh-huh.
You know, because, I mean, that's the way you could definitely begin to create a crack within the ownership. But that's still an issue, right? You know,
right.
And Jerry Jones is like, you know, I'm banging it. I'm leveraging big on this, you know, but I'm giving up. And that's always the issue.
Right.
My sense is that they decided, and I haven't looked at this much, you know, strategically, it's like, you know, we get the money, you know, then the fact that, you know, these small market teams are getting what they get doesn't matter as much.
Right.
So that's probably why we haven't heard it. Doesn't mean it. Because there isn't, that would create division in the ranks, and I don't see that. And some of the old school people who've been committed to that, you know, like the ownership of the Giants and you know a lot of your Steelers. I mean, some of the old time voices are probably, you know, squelching that a little bit and just saying, you know, shut up. I mean, really, the way this is what we're gonna stick with this and be united on these other fronts. So. You know, you don't know how it's going to go. I mean, this is poker, and again, the players don't have much. They don't have much leverage,
right?
Because the closer this gets to the beginning of the season, the weaker their leverage gets. Historically, that's how it's been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if this union's any help is stronger. We might find out.
I think the genius move about them decertifying is that if it holds up in court, which we'll know on April 6th, is that it prevents a lockout. So they can still have a season next year while they get this settled out in court.
Yeah, and I think the last time they said it happened, it took like 6 years.
Yeah.
They basically played without a collective bargaining agreement. You know, and fans would be okay with that.
Right. As long as there's some games.
As long as they get the games, however that works. And then you'd be able to do the transactions if that comes, you know, if that comes much sooner, then you can still get those transactions in before draft.
Because,
you know, you'd have to default back to whatever the current system in or whatever it might be. You'd be able to get some of those transactions in. You know, that's where people like Cobb and some of those other folks become, you know, available and become strategic tools for the draft. I mean,
right.
That's a team that's hurt. Like a team like Philadelphia who could really be making a move here is hurt. You know,
right.
Because I think they were hoping to leverage – you know, him, Cobb into some draft picks and some other stuff, you know, they can't do that. That's going to take away a major pawn for them. So, you know, I think that's the, you know, if you're in that situation, you're hoping for that ruling to come down and be able to make this, you know, even though they're solidarity, teams still want to position themselves to win.
Uh-huh.
And they know it's going to start again. They want to be in the best position to win. So,
right.
You know, this thing is, you know, As Herm Edwards said, don't mess up the cha-cha. We talking about $9 million cha-cha. Don't mess it up.
Right.
You know, and that's what you got to make sure you stay on top of. It to me, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. But you know, when you're dealing with those kind of zeros, some of those folks, this doesn't make sense to them. But what you putting this through doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right.
At all. You know, I think you can come up with a solution that's going to work for everybody. But, you know, if you think you can break folks, you're going to do it.
Right.
think that's the big issue.
Yeah, man. So I'm hoping it all gets settled out. I'm on the side of the players, though, for sure. I'm rolling with the players on this one. You know, because I think they put more on the line than
So the association.
Yeah,
I know we got a few minutes here. We always got to hear something with the association. I know you want to talk a little bit about the Bulls and some of your perspective here. You know, we obviously get back into some of the NBA basketball next week, but I know you had a perspective on the Bulls making some run here down the stretch.
Yeah, man, the Bulls, man, look out. I know the national media is starting to jump on the Bulls, but you know, look out. The boys they can play. Derrick Rose is having a great season. Man, he's taking a huge leap. You know, he's put himself right in that conversation with CP3 and Deron Williams as who's the best point guard in the league. I think he has a different skill set than they do. I think he can score at a clip that they can't score at.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, he's a dominant player. And he's dominant at a position that the Heat don't have. He's dominant at the position that the Lakers really can't guard well. You know, I think the Bulls are a year away from being, you know, tough. And I think they're going to be tough for the next 4 or 5 years. They scare me more than the Heat at this point. I think the Bulls are one solid shooting guard away from being a real scary team. I think the Heat are still 2 or 3 players away from being a real scary team. But yeah, and they got a coach. They finally found a coach. You know, they've been looking for a coach since Phil left. They got a coach. They got a star in Rose. They got complimentary players in Boozer and Noah. You know, they got Luol Deng has been great. You know. You know, I call Luol Deng at 17-7. You know, he had automatic 17-7. You know, first option, he's going to give you 17-7. Third option, 17-7. That's what he's going to give you.
it is just so true about him, man. And
yeah.
I said that. As soon as he moved third option, I'm like, this team is going to be good.
Yep.
Because he's still going to give you that and be your third option. They gonna kill you. So you hit it right on the head on that one. And Miami got on the Spurs.
Oh yeah, Miami put it on the Spurs, and good for them because they needed that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Miami needed a big win. They needed to take it to somebody. And I think one thing that they are doing is Bosh said, "Give me the ball, damn it."
That's what he said.
And they started giving it to him, and it's paying dividends, you know?
Yeah, 30-12 a night.
Yeah. And what you're seeing, I think, is what you're seeing is LeBron taking a back seat and not focusing so much on scoring, which has been my big thing the whole time is that if he just would let D-Wade and Bosh do the heavy lifting of scoring, they're gifted. They're good at that. Let them do what they do, and you find that you're the most versatile piece, you know? And because you're the most versatile piece, be versatile. You know, that's what makes LeBron an elite talent, is that his versatility. At his size, his versatility is what makes him an elite talent. And I think when he focuses so much on scoring, he's not utilizing that versatility.
Yeah, I mean, he had, what, 21 points, 8 assists, and 6 rebounds. So those are the kind of numbers he needs to have. Having that, distribute, score a little bit. Maybe you keep him in with the second unit a little bit where he can keep things flowing. But, yeah, you're right. And then, you know, and but Wade had 29 and Bosh had 30 and 12. I mean, that's what you need.
I mean, to me, that's ideal. To me, that's ideal for them. If they get that kind of production out of Bosh, they're a different kind of team.
Mm-hmm.
They're absolutely a different kind of team, and they're a harder team to beat. And I think they're finally starting to figure that out. It shouldn't have took them so long, but the reason I think it took them so long is ego. LeBron has only played one way his whole career. You know what I mean? Just as much as he wanted teammates, The reason he wanted some great teammates is because he never had great teammates. So, you know, he ain't never had no great teammates. So it take a moment to figure out how to play with him. And I think the reason it took so long, I mean, it's March. It's going to be April. And they just now seem like they're figuring it out. Now, whether they can sustain it, that's another thing. But if they can't sustain it and they pull back and they go away from it, again, it gets back to that ego. And I think that's what the beauty of the Bulls is that the Bulls don't seem to have that ego. They don't see – they see – everybody seems to know their role and everybody fits together well. They fit together well. Like I said, I think they're missing that one more piece, which is a shooting guard, you know, who can stroke it and play, still play some D. Because they got Korver who can stroke it, but Korver couldn't guard, you know, a jacket on a hanger.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's the one thing. And I think the Heat are starting to figure out how they can fit together. You know, they're getting better at it, at figuring that out. I still think they got a ways to go, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as we're going down the stretch here, I mean, it's, you know, the Heat are coming together at the right time. You know, it's taking the time to do it. But, yeah, I don't see them making that run in that seven-game series. You know, are they going to sustain it? Are you going to break away? Because, you know, seven-game series forces you to, at times, break away from who you are. If you don't have it, if it's not well-developed part of your concept of your team, if you haven't really ingrained it, the Bulls are going to play like they play, like they play.
Right.
You're not going to break them out of their pattern.
Right.
It's the philosophy they're buying into. It's who they are, and they're going to try and will it on you.
I think that's good that you said that, because I think that's the other thing. They bought in to Thibodeau and what he's selling and what he's preaching, and they're rolling with that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if Miami's necessarily bought in, because again, these teams are both. This is the first year of both of these teams for both of these teams. You know, I think people forget. People talk about, you know, giving Miami time. You know, Chicago just came together just like Miami just came together. And, you know, they didn't have as much overturn as Miami, but they're playing better, and they've come together quicker because the pieces fit together better.
And I think, and also I think the coach came with a pedigree. You know, even though he wasn't the head coach, he comes with a championship pedigree in a way that Spoelstra doesn't. Even though I think they sense he knows what he's talking about, they sense he, but there's no indication that he's been to the promised land. Like, I don't know if he was there under Riley, but it doesn't seem like he comes with that same kind of pedigree that Thibodeau comes with.
Right.
Well-chronicled, you know, defensive mastermind of the Celtics championship run. You know?
Right.
The way that I know what I'm talking about. And the Bulls don't really – they don't bring players that, you know, who bring that kind of cachet to the table because, you know, even Boozer, I mean, he hasn't won.
Mm-hmm.
So you got – so I think even that part plays a role in how people accept it. And the other thing is, like I said before, when your best player is developing his game, that means you need to work on yours. And Rose
right.
has been a willing person to evolve and develop his game in a way that I haven't seen that kind of evolution with, like I said, LeBron, Bosh. I wouldn't put him in that conversation yet. And then, you know, Wade has got elements of it, but there's other elements he hasn't developed, not in the way that I would say Rose has made great leaps and bounds in some areas that your teammates look to you and say, if he can do that, I got to do it.
Right.
And then he just kind of follow his lead. So all the things are part of it.
Yeah. So we got about 90 seconds left before the show is over. Before we go, I want to remind people, get on Facebook, get signed up for the challenge. See if you can knock me, D, and Ray out that top spot. I tell you what, as hard as this bracket is going to be to pick, I'm going to pick it well. I'm gonna pick the hell out of it. So you're gonna have to make sure you got your picks on point to beat me.
Yeah.
So be on the lookout for the challenge.
Just you know, don't step up to get beat down. That's all we do. That's all. That's what you have to do. But we hold on three spots. Got a feeling. We got
that. But yeah, if you take one of those top three spots, we're going to have some nice little prizes for you. So be sure to get in and get signed up. It don't cost you nothing. It don't cost you nothing to get signed up. Just a few minutes to put your picks out there. But you got to bring it. You got to come with it. You got to take us down. You got to take one of us down at least.
It's going to cost you your pride. Some of y'all, that might cost a lot.
How much is your pride worth? Well, that's all we got for this week. Make sure you be on the lookout. Get signed up for the challenge on Facebook, Real Sports Guys on Facebook. Check us out. Till next week, be blessed and take care. Peace. All right, we out. Hey, you still there, Devon?
Oh, sorry about that. I'm there. Go get our
okay.
Sea legs on that one.
Say what?
I said, I feel like I had to get my sea legs on that one. Trying to keep the energy up.
Yeah.
It's been a long one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we had a good one, though.
Yeah, I think that was a good show, man.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that would have been a good one to have Ray on.
Yeah.
But I'd love to hear Ray's. Ray talks about location. I love when he talks about an explanation about paying attention to where they're playing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you laughing. That's the one in the minutes. We got to have that one. See if we can get him on next week.
Yeah.
To talk about that. But
yeah.
He has me cracking up all the time about that one. But,
yeah.
But yeah. But yeah, try and get some folks on. See if we can get a couple people loaded. And I just sent it out to Randall Larry.
Okay.
So he can get some folks on there.
All right, cool.
So we'll go from there. I'll probably post on Facebook again. But yeah.
Yeah, do that. And I'm gonna pass it around and see if we can get some more people on there.
Okay.
Because hell, it's free. People are gonna be doing brackets anyway.
Yeah. Oh, shoot.
Oh, what was that?
Oh, that's Randall's one.
Oh.
I thought that was mine. I was like, there's people on here already. But I didn't get that group. I was like, what's going on? I was like, damn, a group jumped up on here already.
Right.
But I sent a message out to that entire group.
Okay.
It is.
Okay.
So hopefully they'll get the... they'll get it and come and jump on. But yeah, I looked at him. So he told me to send it to him again.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, he'll share it.
Yeah.
But yeah,
all right, man.
Chicago?
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna be heading out Thursday night.
So. All right. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what I'm gonna do. I probably might hang around here, but
okay.
Yeah, but I'll let you know. I'll connect with y'all and see where y'all at.
All right, do that.
I decided to come on down there.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
All right, man.
All right, man. Peace.
All right, take care. Peace.